Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Thank you for listening to Spin, the Rally Pod, brought to you by Dirtfish Rally School. For your chance to experience life behind the wheel of a rally car, head to drive.dirtfish.com to find the course that's right for you. What are you waiting for? We're right here waiting for you.
Welcome back to Spin the Rally Pod for part two of our very special listener Q&A. I'm James Bowman, and back with me to answer more of your questions are George Donaldson, Colin Clark, and David Evans. And guys, we'll jump straight into our next question, which comes from Kevin on Facebook, and he asks, did we ever discuss the Roger Albert Clark rally? Kevin, I think we might have done briefly, but we can definitely do it again.
George Donaldson. We've got literally another hour. That could take
over
the
day. There's only one thing to talk about that rally, David.
What's that?
What?
The route. Colin.
Yeah, no. The route, everything is a given.
Colin Heppenstall.
It is the sound of a BDA stroke BDG or a Lancia Stratos Ferrari V6 engine at full song as the sun goes down on a dusky, frosty evening, absolutely still, echoing through the forest for miles and miles, and then exploding into sight and then echoing away for miles and miles. That's enough said. There's lots of videos on YouTube. I've seen them all, and I'm continuing to watch them for weeks afterwards. Amazing.
What is it, though? About it. I mean, yeah, it's a packed entry. It's a linear route through Britain. Why do we all hanker after going back to the 70s and early 80s so
it's
much?
Not, you know, that, David. It's not that. It's just adventure. It's just fun adventure. It's getting around and about.
It's fun,
you know?
Adventure. It's a combination of things. It's fun, it's adventure, it's nostalgia. I mean, we all hanker back to the 80s, David, you know. Back to the days of Wham, a full head of hair, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Oh, dear. Here we go. Look, Dave, Colin, I've managed to nearly a whole year without giving you a ribbing about something to do with your hair or your heritage. And here we go. I'm buttoning my lip as best I can.
Here's the thing. I have kept my very first suit that I bought in 1984. And I bought it from... I think it was Top Man in Dundee.
Don't want to know.
It was Electric Blue George. Electric Blue.
Electric
Blue. My 14-year-old son now fits into it.
Rally cars, please.
Your taste hasn't improved since then, Colin.
No. It set the tone. Listen, I wrote something about when this Sunday point scoring system was announced. I said it's not a bad solution to the issue. You know, the issue we've got with Sundays being too short and a bit boring and driver saving tires. I said the easiest option is actually to get rid of Sundays. And David, you've advocated that. You'll mix rallies up a little bit. You know, let's have 2-day rallies. Let's, you know, endurance is a very subjective thing. Endurance can be 300Ks over 36 hours. That's endurance for me. And the backlash I got from suggesting that, you know, we should be cutting rallies, everyone shouting and screaming, saying, look at the Roger Albert Clark. It was 5 days. Look at the crowds. Look at the people. Look at the excitement, the attention, the drama. We should be going back to 5-day rallies. No, we shouldn't. No, we shouldn't. You know, if you had a championship of 5-day rallies, you would just get a whole host of very bored people.
Why is that, Colin?
I think because we're not, David, 5 days. Take the Dakar.
No. Why, specifically, why would people get bored over 5 days right now?
A championship of 5 days events, they're too long.
No, but why? They're not too long.
They are too long.
No, you're missing a singular, massive point that sits at the heart of everything that we're going through right now. You're missing it. Completely missing it. The lack of competition. If we had 20 cars going at it, hammer and tongs, for 5 days, everybody would be absolutely in love with this sport.
Yeah, but David, maybe. But what you see, I agree with that, but what you find with endurance with longer events is that the level of competition throughout the course of the event just disappears. As the top drivers fall out, and it's
it does, but if you've got 20 top drivers, they're going potentially, they're going to stay there.
But 20 top drivers over 36 hours for me is an ideal solution. 48 hours is an ideal solution. An absolute ideal solution.
And you're right, just before you jump in, George, sorry, because you're dead right, because we had five-day rallies, and we had loads of it. We didn't actually have loads of entries back in the days of Group B, but actually the events were measured by, 10 minutes. Wins were taken by minutes. Yeah, the competition was never that close. So ignore everything I've just said. Apologies.
Both make good points, but when I went spectating when I was young, which was quite a while ago, on REC Rally and all the other events around, we had no idea what the results were until we read it in Autosport next week or Motoring News next week. Literally, there was no way to know it. There was no way to find out. There was no internet. Yeah. There was nothing. There was something. There was the fabulous follow-on stage end crews that gave us some information, but it was pretty thin. But the bottom line is, we went to spectate to watch spectacular cars being driven sideways everywhere, and it was just amazing. And for an on-site spectator support sport, rallying, even when driven not fully aggressively, is still amazing to watch. It might not be so interesting to follow on the internet or on the TV footage, because you can perceive different things. But as an actual live spectator sport, rally never gets boring. It never does. It's so guttural, it's so real, and it's so fabulously accomplished. You're watching a skill level that's just, even when you go to a club event, you watch club drivers, the guy in car number 67 in an old Peugeot 205 coming into a corner far too fast, and then surprising himself by getting round it, and you're just left in absolute awe. The guy's coming into a corner 40 miles an hour too fast, never gives up, it's two gears too high, and he somehow gets round the corner, grabs the two gears lower, and scoots off like nothing's happened. That is a spectacle worth seeing. That doesn't translate to the internet, it doesn't even translate very easily to TV, but by God, it translates to the fact that you've driven your car out into the country, parked in a ditch, walked up through a forest, over ditches, through bogs, found yourself a spot, a fast spot with some nagery wee bits in it, and nothing.
Maybe that's something we have to push, George, and something I've talked about as well is the fact that your rallying does offer that opportunity for adventure for people, young people, to get out and about.
It does,
And we don't push that enough, And it's kids are looking for something. Certainly, an element of the younger generation are looking for something that is anti the internet, anti scrolling, anti screen time. They are looking for something to go out and do that gets them away from all that nonsense. And maybe we don't push it enough, but I'm not sure it's enough to make the sport successful, but maybe we don't push it enough.
And there are a fair few young people up at the RAC, Colin. I was out for one of the days. It was a really mixed audience out in the forest, and a driver who also brought a lot of people out was Oliver Solberg. So,
of course,
that was really.
Was it a mixed audience, James? Genuinely, I'd be interested. Were there a fair number of youngsters out and about?
Lots of families who bring the youngsters along,
great.
And a mix of all people, I would say. It's great to see. Okay, let's move on to the next question then. That comes from Ferdinand on X, and he asks, is there any update on Subaru's potential return to the WRC? David Evans, any thoughts?
Sadly, no update.
I've got an update, David.
I just was about to say, stay tuned to Dirtfish, and let's move on to the next question.
Sorry, I spoke to some old friends at STI. I worked there for 15 years. The last 10, 12 of those directly in Japan, in Tokyo, at Mitaka, at headquarters. Still got lots of friends there. And they laughed at me when I asked. Nothing happening there as far as they're concerned.
Yeah,
they're not necessarily very senior, but they're not junior either. They say nothing happening.
There is, I mean, you don't have Akio Toyoda pushing this and not have something happening, but it seems to come in waves that there's a lot of chatter and then there's no chatter. And so I don't know, but as I say, stay tuned and we will bring you any news or updates when we get them.
Absolutely. Okay, Owen the Scout on X asks, do you find it interesting that the WRC has never had a North American champion? And do you think it will happen in the future? Colin Clark?
It is interesting, isn't it? Because North America is seen as, if not quite the home of motorsport, it's certainly the home of the motor industry. And it is odd that rallying never really has found a real home and a real base, a real fan base in the States. And that's what you need, you know, if you're going to develop then, you know, properly competitive drivers. Yes, I think, you know, it's interesting. It is odd that it's never happened. But I think, again, going back to what we talked about just a moment or two ago about the need to find something different. And I think rallying offers in the States a different type of spectating experience, a different type of adventure that other motorsports don't offer, you know, motoring fans in the States. So I think there's every chance. I think there's every chance that, you know, with the efforts that certainly Dirtfish are making, that the ARA are making, that the WRC are making to go back to the States, there's every chance that in the future, but you're not talking in the near future, 10 or 15 years, 20 years maybe, you know, if the sport does actually get a bit of a foothold, there's every chance, because you've got such an enormous population base there. You've got such an enormous potential rallying community there that if it goes right, if it's done properly, if it does catch the imagination and it does take off, there's every chance.
It'll be within 5 years, and I'll tell you who it's going to be. And it will really make waves.
Yes, I agree, David.
It'll be Lea Block.
It'll be Lea Block.
Listen, yeah. I, David, you know what I said about Lea Block when we saw her out at... Yeah. What was it? Was it the LSPR?
Yeah.
Which one was it we were at?
Yeah, LSPR last round.
I genuinely, in 20 years of following rallying, I've never seen a youngster doing what she did in four stages.
No.
To jump into that four-wheel drive car, to drive as quickly, as confidently, and as accomplished as she did for those four stages was just quite incredible.
Yeah.
And at that point, I got dead excited, and you went, Colin, just, you know, hold your horses.
She's retired.
Well, she's retired. And then she's gone off to do the Formula One Academy. She's been pinched. But
she'll come back.
I
went and watched her in Oregon Trail Rally. I was interested enough in her performance to make sure I went and spectated a couple of times. And she's got plenty moxie. She's got plenty of skill. The skill developing, you can see it. And no fear at all. I would say an intelligent driver already, which is a great start, because the intelligence is sometimes the hardest thing to gift drivers. But she came down a very, very fast twisty section, and she was as committed as the very top driver, as Brendan. She's got the potential. If she wants to, I think she can absolutely do it.
What do you think, David? Do you think we'll see? You know, she's obviously got this deal with the... Is it Formula One Academy?
Yeah.
What do you think? Are we going to see much of her in rallying in the coming years?
Who knows, Cole? I think there is, obviously, from what we saw with her making her debut in Group E in Nitro a couple of weeks ago. There's potential for her to do stuff in her formative years with Williams Racing. So she can, potentially, she could still maybe go and do some ARA rounds this year. But... It's all about her, isn't it? She's got a reasonably longish term agreement, I think, with Williams. And obviously the desire there is to see her in Formula One. And that, you know, we talk about making history in rallying, to have a woman, but to make history, what was that? Was Leila Lombardi or something, the last Formula One woman, the last woman to race in F1 was nearly 50 years ago. Please correct me if I'm wrong on that, but do it nicely. You know, that to see Lea Block competing in Formula One in 3 or 4 years, 2 or 3 years, whatever, would be sensational. But for me, I just hope she comes back. I hope, Lea, see sense. The sense is on the dirt. It's all there. You'll never have as much fun as you have in a rally car.
So I would just be happy to see her succeed in Formula George. One or Rally. I'd just be delighted to see her succeed.
Yeah, and she will, because, you know...
She wants to.
And, you know, it's a weird thing to talk about natural talent, but that inherent talent and just the ability to get in, you know, was it 14 years old and she was driving the Hoonicorn or whatever it's called at, you know, 1,100 horsepower? If you can do that at 14, you know, Formula One, it's a doddle.
It's an intimidating car to drive any way you look at
exactly.
it.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So, no, James, answer to the question. We will see it shortly. Fingers crossed.
Okay. Well, excuse me. We'll keep an eye out for that, certainly. George, I'm going to ask you the next question as a former team member. Jarno on Facebook asks, where's the best bar for the Rally Finland after party?
It always used to be in the Rantasipi Hotel. And that was an amazing experience. That went on for... just hours and hours, and it went on all night, basically. You would find people lying in the car park in the morning underneath your car. it was always the Rantasipi. I don't know, these days, you know, you've got that lovely shopping precinct and the Bricks. Is it the Bricks Bar
the
down
brick.
There? Or the Brick?
The Brick's gone there. Now, though. The Bricks
is it?
Gone.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I've not been there for about, I think, 3 years. I think 2019 or 2020 was the last time I was there. And you've got that sort of square down that end of the street at the bottom end of that main street where you've got all the pubs and the restaurants. It's pretty decent party down there. If I was Finland Rally, I'd make sure the party was in the service park, actually.
Yeah. And
what was the bar that Harry Rovanperä owned, David? Was that Bricks?
No, okay.
Harry's
remember,
bar. It was Harry's bar,
remember.
Wasn't it? That was always a popular one.
But it was disappointing though, because even the Rantasipi, we seem to go there every year, Cole, and all of the rally pictures have gone. Same in Hotel Yamsa. Yeah,
what?
All of the rally pictures have gone off the wall. So,
it's the nature of our sport denuding itself of its own history and moving with the times, you might say maybe I had to, of course, but we'll lose our heritage. Now you make me desperately keen to go back to up to Calderodi, up to the Lava restaurant above San Remo.
Oh,
I hope to goodness all the stuff's up still up there.
Yeah,
definitely. Anybody going to Italy, everyone go to Italy, go to the Lava restaurant up at Calderodi. Up at the top of the Calderodi stage. What's the name of the wee town up there? I forget what it's called.
San Romolo.
San Romolo, thank you. Above San Remo. I mean, go to Italy. The food is amazing. The people are fantastic. The roads are wonderful. And did I mention the food's fantastic? And also the food is fantastic. Yeah, Italy's just
certainly
wonderful.
Is.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, Rano.
Lancia, what can we say? Fiat, yes.
Enough. Let's move on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Jarno's got some bars to try in Finland and Italy. There you go, Jarno. Jamie on X asks us, what is the ideal number of manufacturers for the WRC in Dirtfish's opinion? David Evans?
I would say five, but I don't know what I'd base that on. I would have five or six, and I would ask them all to supply three cars plus a fourth car for a junior driver.
Ooh. Oh, that's ballsy. I'd have said six and a third car for a junior driver, but six and a fourth car for a junior is even better.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And maybe
maybe
make it Rally 2 as well.
Rally 2 Plus, as we've already discussed, and it's now been endorsed by Kalle Rovanperä in an article on the Fish this week. Thank you. And six sounds like a good number. But the most important thing is that the cars are affordable and there is a pathway for those that can have the opportunity, that can generate the opportunity. It's still a massive amount of money. Motorsport always has been. But the most important thing, I think Colin mentioned it, a junior path. Well, look, I don't think you have to have a specific junior path or a specific program. Do it if you want. Don't do it if you want. But just make it possible for someone that can actually generate the support to come through and get the kilometres, get the mileage, get the experience up there at the top. Yes, please.
And do you know what else, George? You're Rally 2 Plus offers again. It offers again that opportunity for privateers. You know, we've lost competitive privateers. Yeah. We've lost them.
Yeah.
They don't exist anymore.
No, it's completely gone.
All right. You know, the last, maybe, thinking back, the last really competitive privateer we had, you might argue, was Robert Kubica. And he always said, you can never really realistically hope to win rallies. You might win a rally as a privateer with circumstances, but if you're a privateer without the testing, without the development that you're involved in, it's always going to be difficult. Now it's impossible. But you go our Rally 2 Plus, you know, you offer that opportunity again. You get sponsors back in again. You get activation back in again. You get coverage back in again. Local drivers, all that sort of thing. Yep, I agree. So you might only have four or five manufacturers, but you supplement that with a good number of competitive privateers and you've got a really, really interesting field again.
All rallying, one source. By now, you know that dirtfish.com is the place to go for all of your rallying news. But when it's time to try your hand behind the wheel, just join us here at Dirtfish Rally School, nestled in the Cascade Mountains in Snoqualmie, Washington. Whether you're a pro seeking extra seat time or a novice looking to get started, we've got programs tailored to all rallying needs. And when you want to watch the best in the world, just head over to our YouTube channel. Our coverage of the WRC and American rallying is second to none. Follow us at Dirtfish Rally across all social media platforms and shop the latest looks in our merchandise store now. As always, rally on.
Next question comes from Nigel and Peter on Facebook. And they both want to know, will there ever be another Rally GB on gravel? And with Rally Ceredigion getting a round on next year's ERC, could we ever see an all-tarmac round of Rally GB? David, what are your thoughts on that prospect?
Definitely could see a tarmac round. We came close, didn't we, with Rally, what would have been Rally Northern Ireland, without getting into the politics of where it all starts and stops. So, yeah, it was close. And, yeah, why not? It takes some imagination from Britain's motorsport, the British motorsport's governing body. It takes some ability to go out there and find a sponsor. But if we can find people who can do that, then for sure we can have a round on gravel again. The WRC promoter is desperate to recreate the magic that was Rally GB. Let's get the personnel in place and let's make it happen.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear. So there you go. We could see another Rally GB on gravel. Nigel, don't lose all hope yet.
No, definitely okay, not.
There you go. Nicholas on Facebook asks, what are our thoughts on only three rounds being outside of Europe in next year's WRC season? Colin Clark, what do you think about that?
It's a tough one. It's a long way. Oliver Ciesla, who used to be the head of the WRC promoter, he had a vision for a 16-round championship, and his vision was eight rounds in Europe. How else did it work? It was eight rounds then outside of Europe, so it was four in the Americas, four in the, if you like, the Australasia sort of region. So it was half and half Europe and then the rest of the world, half and half.
And Africa.
You know, it's not ideal for me with three outside of Europe, but I kind of get it. You know, there's lots of things going on, isn't there, in terms of costs to the teams, in terms of rallies that can afford to be part of the championship. There's an awful lot going on in that mix that maybe we're not completely privy to. But you know, ideally, you'd have four or five rounds outside of Europe. Once it becomes a European-centric championship, it begins to lose its unique identity, I think. You know, and if we get too many rallies that are the same, it loses its unique identity. So it's not an ideal situation. And I think it's one that the promoter, if they were asked, would probably admit is not an ideal situation. And I'm sure it's one that they're looking to rectify for coming years.
Okay, thank you, Colin. George, next question is coming to you. I think you've already touched on this slightly, but Camille on X asks, should the WRC focus more on private teams like M Sport and Talk Sport rather than on manufacturers? And he points out that private teams like Williams have kept F1 going in its leaner periods over the years, not the manufacturers.
Gosh, this is a massive question, and so many facets to it. So we're on short answers here, and I'll try to be good and be short. But I don't think it should focus on privateers. I think you should just make it possible for them. I think ultimately factory cars will always be the fastest, but it should be possible for private teams to challenge really, really close. And maybe occasionally we'll see something magic happen, because rally gives us those incredibly difficult circumstances where somebody, you know, running slightly further down the field that's still very quick can get an advantage on a stage. They get a dry stage where someone else gets a wet stage. They get a wet stage where someone else gets a dry stage, whatever. Snow, ice, melting, etc., etc. So, yes, I think the changes to the sport that we've just already talked about would lend themselves to what you're asking. As to any sort of sporting loading, I don't believe in that. I don't believe in handicapping anything. I think we've got to keep it attractive to the manufacturers so their teams can win. But ultimately, they just want their cars to win. So if they're giving great cars to privateers that win, then that's fantastic. Look at motorbike racing. Now, most of the factory teams are not factory teams. They're private teams that get given factory bikes. Maybe we could see rallying develop that way. That would be super interesting. Yeah, I like that one. I'll start a team now.
MotoGP, you've just had the star rider go to one of the satellite teams. Mark Marquez
exactly.
is...
Yeah, exactly.
That shows you can be competitive there.
There's definitely development to be done there. And the sport, I mean, there's maybe a lot of debate about it. For me, simplistically, the debate is over. The time for action is there. But I, of course, understand the intricacies of it all. But really, we have to bite the bullet.
Okay, thank you, George. Next question comes from Mr. BBS on X, and we've already touched on the new point system, so let's keep our answers specific to what Mr. BBS is asking here. And he says, should the WRC award points per day to the top performing drivers to keep each day more interesting? Colin, what do you think about that?
Well, before we came on here, I had a quick question to the boys about the new point system. I do think we're in danger of overcomplicating things. You know, we've now effectively got two competitions running on the Sunday, haven't we? We've got the competition for the overall winner, the competition for the Sunday winner. And let's call it three competitions because we've got the competition for the power stage winner as well thrown in there. You know, it's not easy. We don't make the sport easy to follow and to understand at times. And I think... You know, we've heard this talked about before, points for stage wins, points for day wins. It all gets quite complex, I would imagine, to the casual viewer. You know, who's leading? Who's winning? You know, how's this guy? Possibly he's won the day, so he's won the rally. No, he's not. He's not won anything. I don't know. I think we're in danger of overcomplicating things and making it all just a little bit too difficult to follow. So I'd like to see some new ideas coming up. You know, I agree there's a need... which has been addressed by the FIA, there is a need to keep, you know, the rally competitive from start to finish. But there has to be a more simple way of doing that, I'd have thought, than you know, giving points willy-nilly for various things. You know, we'll be giving points for the fastest tyre change at some point now in the stage or something like that. You know, they're gimmicky. They're slightly gimmicky for me. And we don't need to be too gimmicky. We just need to be pretty clear, pretty straightforward, and come up with a system that does keep that competitive element all the way through the rally.
Lots of competitive cars present, rather than just half a dozen, and that's that. Yes. And then you can go back to normal point scoring, you know, and you can actually retire from the rally, and you can retire because actually there's 25 top cars there, 30 top cars there.
Okay, Richard on Facebook asks, and this is another one for you, Colin. How can we get Colin Clark to do more kitchen tables? We love his passion and insight.
I love doing my kitchen tables. Well, the kitchen table is just an opportunity for me to pontificate for 20, 25 minutes without David or George interrupting. And it's magnificent. And I love the opportunity to do that. Listen, we'll keep this one very brief. I will do more because I know that there's a strange group of people out there who do like to hear them. So I will do more. That's a promise.
David, do you want to do podcast together with me, David, at some point? Yeah,
shall we?
Just you and me, David, so we don't get any of those tedious interruptions from our colleague.
I'm all so in, George.
Thank you, David.
Next question comes from KRX Project on X, and they ask, what do we think of the possibility of satellite teams for Hyundai and Toyota? And he suggests Hyundai could run a Kia satellite team while Toyota could run a Subaru one. George, we've already touched on this, I think, a little bit, but what do you think about that idea?
Well, I think, look, it's quite obvious and quite fabulous. It absolutely could be done in terms of, you know, the connection is there. It could easily happen. But the cost is so high. And you'd wonder if either of those teams, Hyundai or Toyota, could really focus and give an equal chance with those complex and expensive cars. But in theory, it should be quite simple. So, yes, it could work. I think if Kia wanted to invest in it, and if Subaru wanted to invest in it, it would be run out of, one would be run out of Frankfurt and the other would be run out of Jyväskylä. And there's no reason why it couldn't. And there would be a cost reduction effectively, because obviously the main engineering is, it would be massive cost reduction, be dead cheap actually in broad terms. Be a good solution for us short term. But it's not short term, because it would take at least a year to get all that up and running, possibly 18 months, at which point hopefully our current Rally 1 car is defunct and we've got a Rally 2 car. Rally 2 Plus, which would be harder for those manufacturers to come in. Almost impossible for Subaru, because they don't have any small cars anymore. There are other opportunities there for manufacturers like Subaru to come in, I feel. And obviously in America, they do an incredible job with quite a big car. And just a little bit of flexibility, you can work all that in.
Yeah, it certainly would be great to see them back. Next question comes from Midwest Antonio. He says, thank you for the pod. Thank you for listening. And is there any particular driver on board that hasn't yet surfaced that you would love to see? David Evans, can you think of one?
Ooh, that's a great question. That's a great question. Yeah, I mean, you've got to go back before 2018, I think it was, when the fabulous All Live service started, where now you can go and watch literally any onboard. It's all at your fingertips. So a big, big thanks to WRC Promoter for that. Going back further, I would go back to, I'm not even sure, you know, I do tend to use Group B as a bit of a reference point. I'm not even sure there almost certainly wasn't an onboard camera, but I would love to see the moment in Argentina when Lancia landed its helicopter pretty much on the stage, right in front of Marco Alen, to slow Alen down, because he was refusing to slow down for Mickey Biazion, to let Biazion win. Probably, I don't know, it would be mid-80s, could have been it must have been a Delta S4. Anything like that. You know, we've got some incredible stories from the 80s and 90s, from all the way down through the history of our championship and our sport. So, yeah, some of that kind of onboard would be sensational. Or seeing, was it Stig Blomqvist, I think, who averaged 150 miles an hour, also in Argentina, down south in an Audi Quattro. Yeah, just a big bunch of Group B stuff.
When did onboard start, boys? When did they first become, you know, pretty much the norm or something that we saw regularly?
Well, they did bits, didn't they? I mean, you go back, yes, remember that in at the deep end thing with Chris Searle and Roger Clark back in that was 70s or early 80s. That was virtually a big camera strapped to a roll cage, though, wasn't it?
It literally was. I remember Jimmy McRae coming to a couple of car club nights, must have been in the early 80s, with footage for us, with films. Like, that would have been from Vauxhall or Opel at that time. I think it was maybe Opel by then. And he gave us in-car footage that was just absolutely sublime. Remember the in-car footage from Ari Vatanen on the Isle of Man, where he goes through the over the cattle grid, through the gate in the cattle grid quite sideways, and poor Terry Harriman just keeps reading the notes, and he just slips in a dear God and cracks on with the notes, and you think to yourself, holy cow, that was flat in fifth gear. 125 miles an hour, same speed as the cars currently do, with a two-wheel drive car, tires with a fraction of the grip that the current cars have. And see what you want about Ari Vatanen, that man has has had balls of steel. But whilst they might have that, that is nothing compared to what co-drivers did in those flimsy group four stroke group B cars, two-wheel drive, early Escort, well, the late Escorts. Wow. Yeah. So the footage has been around for a while. I mean, pretty good. It all came down to mounting. So, but the widespread like we've got now, well, I mean, it's current technology is pretty good. And, you know, you can now buy for a couple of hundred quid a GoPro or a DJI action cam or something like that that can give you the most amazing footage.
Mm. I've just got to say, just a quick plug in there. Stay tuned to Dirtfish. We have an enormous treat in terms of onboards and what have you coming your way next month in a deal recently agreed by our brilliant and fabulous owner, Mr. Steve Rimmer. So, yeah, we can't really say too much about it at the minute, but it's all very exciting. And some of these dreams might actually come true.
Ooh.
There we go. That's exciting. Okay, next question comes from Chris on Facebook. And he wants to know what our favourite rally that we attended last year was. And he suggests it should definitely be the Lake Superior Performance Rally. Colin, can you think of one last year that stood out for you?
Yeah, Lake Superior was fantastic. It really was. They're just such a great group of... The American rallying community is a fantastic community, but the organisers of the Lake Superior Rally are just a wonderful bunch. They really are. But no, my standout was the last rally of the year. It was Rally Japan. There was just so much going on in Rally Japan. And it's such a different sort of experience to go to Japan and report on rallying, because just everything about rallying there is different. The way it's received, the fans, the atmosphere, the colour, everything is so different. So no, Rally Japan was my favourite, but LSPR would push it very close, I would have to say.
David, you can come in on that one.
Yep, I'd go with LSPR. The action was fantastic. Also, that place that we went to for breakfast was legendary. I can't remember what it's called.
Big Bob's or something.
Yeah, Big Boys or something. I can't remember.
Big Boys, that was
Big
it. Boys. You bought a baseball cap, David.
I did. Big Boys baseball cap. But yeah, I would actually go with Olympus though. Olympus was my first ARA round back for a while. And it's obviously it's the local round for Dirtfish. It was great. It absolutely poured with rain. It was freezing cold, and I loved every minute of it. Up in the
Cold. It was cold, David, wasn't it? So that's good enough for you.
Exactly. Yeah. George, your thoughts?
Well, for me, every rally I go to, I just honestly thoroughly enjoy it, and I take the maximum out of everything. So my first rally this year was a sort of brief visit to Mexico. When I spent a day with the Dirtfish team going around, then I spent a day being quite ill, but I'd eaten in the same restaurant as everyone else, so I've no idea what that was. It was a suspect hotel, and then I spent a day in the service park, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I had some lovely company, lovely meals. Then I was in Oregon Trail, which was absolutely fantastic, and likewise, Colin, you know, as you've said for Lake Superior. The Oregon Trail Rally organisers, the whole community is amazing, and I thoroughly enjoyed my visit there. Notable, the event is notable for the number of dogs on it. Everybody has their pets with them in the back of these fabulous big pickups, which I just love. Call me a redneck, I just love them. The most amazing cars, the most amazing fun people, just having a great time. And most impressive countryside, surrounded by dormant volcanoes. I mean, that's just my type of geography, isn't it? That's the sort of thing I love. And then of course, I blew the very last of my holidays in June, going to Safari Rally for a couple of weeks. And as everyone that's ever heard me chat knows, I love Safari. It's pretty amazing. Met more fabulous people, met the fabulous people that I'd met the previous couple of years, cemented friendships. Had some lovely meals, and you know what an experience Safari is. I had to laugh at Colin when he got stuck in a traffic jam with a rod down his back saying, I'm not going to do what everyone else is. If he'd done that, he would have been there for 3 days. Finally, he defaulted into the George Donaldson mode of just going for it.
Which meant some serious cross-country driving.
So, I mean, but that's Kenya. You know, you just join in the fun with everyone. And, you know, it's just on the sort of gravel fields and old roads driving to find your way through. Yeah, what an adventure. And Safari still brings us that very unique challenge. So I'm not going to say one event over the other. They're all just brilliant. Go to a WRC rally, dip your toe in, dive into it and enjoy it. Enjoy the food, enjoy the people, chat to everyone. Just have a great time. Come with us.
Okay.
James, very quickly, James, what about you?
Mine would have to be the RAC, David, for all the reasons we've discussed. Just there's nothing like it. The sound of that Stratos coming through Kielder Forest in the dark. Yeah, incredible, incredible.
Wow, wow.
Yeah, doesn't get better than that. Our next question. Jared on Facebook asks us, when are we going to see the Dirtfish team back in New Zealand? David, could you give Jared an answer to that?
I think March or April, I can't remember when. Hopefully whenever Otago Rally is happening, we are, fingers crossed, going to be back in Otago, Colin and I, doing what we did last year, which I think what we did most for certainly the first half of last year was fall out, Col. We weren't really speaking, were we?
No, not for the first chunk of it, David.
So no, we'll be back there. We'll be following, obviously, Chris Meek in Otago across the fabulous Curry Bush stage. So looking forward to it. But back in Rally New Zealand, who knows? But I'd be back there in a heartbeat. Trust me.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous mess.
If they said we're going to run exactly the same format as the last WRC in New Zealand, would you be so enthusiastic about it?
Always.
In the same place?
I love the country, Cole. Service Park wasn't ideal. But you and I were speaking by then. We had a bit of a giggle, didn't we? We enjoyed that one.
No, we had fun. we did have fun. Even although we had plenty of time to kind of fall out in the car and that traffic jam on the way. And we didn't. We didn't. So it can't have been all that bad.
Exactly.
Well, there you go, Jared. Get yourself over to Otago. You might get to meet David and Colin. Dropgear Industries.
That's a long way to go, trust me. We will only disappoint. Well, we won't. I will. Well, I will. Cole won't. Sorry. Moving on. It's very early.
Dropgear Industries on X asks, do you know what the ARA's plans are to help usher in new drivers and promote the sport? Colin, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, that's one for David. That's definitely a question. Sorry,
Colin's passing.
But that's definitely a question for David.
Go on then, David.
Go ahead, David.
I think, obviously, ARA is looking to engage with any future kind of FIA programs like Rallystar and America was represented in Rallystar. Specifically in ARA, there's not really all that much that I know of. But probably the best way, if you're a young driver, to further your talent in America is come to Dirtfish, in all seriousness. We're the place to learn to drive rally cars, but also there's a huge amount of experience there that can help guide young drivers. The instructors, everybody in the school is a massive rally fan with a huge amount of experience. So, there's not...
And I think...
Sorry, Cole.
Yeah, and David, I think that's worth reiterating, isn't it? You know, the rally school is the best rally school in the world if you want to learn to drive. But, in terms of connections, in terms of experience, in terms of the ability to give the right advice to young drivers, really... there's not an awful lot better you can do than go to Dirtfish and start talking to some of the people at the Dirtfish Rally School, because from everyone, from the instructors right through to the management, right through to yourself, David, in charge of media, you will get the right advice at every stretch. And George Donaldson. I mean, you've got George Donaldson there in the background waiting to give you hours and hours of wonderful advice. It is such... such a great resource for youngsters, Dirtfish, in the States. It really is. You know, it's all there for you. And you know, there's no question, George, you know what it's like. You know, rallying, you don't get to the top without making mistakes, and you make a myriad of mistakes in rallying to work your way through the different levels. But at every opportunity, you know, that you've got, you should take that opportunity to minimise those mistakes, to mitigate those mistakes. And Dirtfish gives you that, you know, because there are people there that have made those mistakes and that can tell you what to do and maybe more importantly, what not to do in terms of getting through to the higher levels of competitive rallying. And it's something that we need to push maybe a little bit more because, as you say, everyone is so enthusiastic and wants to get so involved with youngsters.
I'm Kellen Koschel, and I just did my first Dirtfish course, which was the one-day women's course. My biggest surprise was how calm it could be in the car, and the calmer I was, the faster I could make the car go. The surprising thing about driving was that it wasn't necessarily a mental thing. I had to really get out of my head and into my body more, and I just felt a little more comfortable doing that for the first time around a group of women. But I will say, I do feel like I could do any of the Dirtfish courses now. I kind of know what to expect, and you know, hopefully more women get into motorsports, and then any day could be an all-women's day if just enough of us are in the sport. If I were talking to someone who was thinking about taking a class but was kind of on the fence, it would be, you know, what are you waiting for? It's such a fun experience. You're going to really learn something, and you're going to push your limits, and maybe you'll even have some more confidence.
Next question is from the Borderland on X, and it's for you, George. It might be slightly controversial, so take a deep breath. Asking, he says you've had some amazing drivers work for you, but who was the worst driver you worked with?
Oh, wow. Well, the worst.
Legal department, yeah.
The worst driver. Crikey. So who was that question from?
He's called the Borderlander on the X.
Borderlander. Well, he has to buy me dinner to get the answer to that question. Yeah, that one doesn't go over the air for free. I mean, you know, Dirtfish ain't paying me enough for this. In fact, they're not paying me at all. So there you go. Look, that's an unfair question. The drivers have massive pressures and demands. You know, they've maybe invested every bean they've got. And they lose, you know, a successful driver has to be demanding. I always wanted drivers, and I remember speaking to some young drivers saying, you need to be asking me things that I want to say no to, and you need to be forcing me to say yes, and then, you know, giving me all the reasons, and then giving me the performances to back up those decisions. So I wanted drivers, as a team manager, I wanted drivers to be really demanding of me, take me to task. I wanted them to be on the phone to me every day, co-drivers, telling me what we needed to do and then contributing to that solution. Because, you know, especially a young driver coming into a team, and I had quite a few privateers we helped in Toyota, sent by importers that had rented cars and coming to do a WRC event. They were a massive amount of pressure on them and, you know, the pressure to perform and deliver to their home market. And they were very often extremely disappointed and quite difficult to deal with throughout because they could sense it was going wrong for them before they even started. And that was a hard thing for anybody to do anything about. So I don't think there was any driver that was particularly difficult or notorious. I think there were some drivers that I worked near that were very difficult and I didn't like. I never really liked Tommy Mäkinen overly much until I met him properly, when I started working with him. And what was quite interesting for me was that the Mitsubishi team quite categorically told me that he was the one that asked for me to be the team manager there. Now, you know, Tommy Mäkinen and I had, you know, always exchanged pleasantries, but he always seemed like quite a cold fish to me, and he turned out to be just simply one of the nicest guys I ever worked with. Very, very demanding, very, very focused, steely. You know, it might seem cold to some people, and that's why I always, you know, cut drivers slack. So I don't think any driver was really a complete and absolute, you know, dingbat, awful git of a person. they were just in a circumstance where they had a lot of pressure and a lot to deliver. And as a team manager, well, okay, sometimes you might just put the wall up and say, no, I've had enough of you. But I don't think I ever really did that to anybody, not in a hard way anyway. You want to try and help them succeed. So it's a tough one, but I hope that's a decent answer.
I think that's a great answer. I think it's a fair answer. An insight into what does make a good driver. So I think that's a great response. Okay, Samuel on Facebook, and I'm going to ask for one-word answers on this, guys. He asks, Peugeot, VW or Subaru, which one would you prefer to see back in the WRC? David Evans.
Subaru.
George.
VW.
Colin, are you going to say Peugeot?
Subaru.
Subaru wins by a majority.
Well, there we go. I didn't hear Colin's answer there. It was a clue, I heard, so I presume he said
I heard
Subaru.
Baru.
Yeah. Oh, Baru. Right, there you go. Then. It's a
different it was Subaru.
Right,
there you go. There you go, Samuel. Subaru it is. Okay, Sam on Facebook asks, and this is a funny question. Who is the quickest driver of the Dirtfish hosts, and is there
Me.
An annual Dirtfish Cup?
Well, inevitably, Sam, it's George Donaldson.
There's not
David.
A Dirtfish Cup,
so
there should
nice.
Be.
That was so nice of you.
Who's the second quickest then, David?
But then again, we could include Brenton Kelly or Nate Tennis or Josie Rimmer or all of these megastars from Seattle. And if we did, I reckon one of the most underrated in the Dirtfish crew is Brenton Kelly. That guy's finished on the podium in Snowdrift. Snowdrift, a rally where
that's
you go...
That's tough, yeah.
Yeah, it's a proper one, isn't it, with no studs
No studded tyres. I mean, that's just purely down to finesse and ability. You know, just stunning. And, you know, to be able to read that and survive, wow. I think I could do reasonably well on that type of circumstance now, but when I was young and keen and trying to win, I would have gone off for sure. Absolutely would have been.
Do you know who else is pretty decent?
Jack
Harrison's great as well. But who else, David, is very decent and whips our backsides every time we get on the simulators?
I'm not listening to Elliot. Any chat about Elliot Barnard? No.
Elliot?
He's
good. A good driver.
But simulator's not real. We need to get Elliot out. Elliot is going to be in school.
Let me tell you, I've had the privilege of being at the school, and I want to say this. Mitch... The instructors drive you, and they are all fantastic. They all humbled me in many ways. I mean, I can drive incredibly quickly and gather up an absolute mess and survive. That was one of my abilities. But when I jumped into the car with Mitch, and he drove me around, the way he commanded a car. And they all actually drove with a great deal of command and finesse and everything, you know, lots of time to explain everything as you go. They were all brilliant, all very accomplished, all very practiced at that. Mitch felt another level to me. I was absolutely gobsmacked. And I did actually comment to him. It was rather like sitting next to a factory test driver in a sort of light manner, but his the way he the amount of time he had, the composure he had, and the way he talked. Obviously, he realised he was preaching to a knowledgeable audience with me. But his ability, exceptional.
So there we get Mitch Williams, the coolest guy as well.
Pretty cool Durfus, guy
with his Top Gun shades on.
I'm assuming our podcasts do play out over the Tannoy system in Dirtfish, and if they're not, Josie,
I think it's just in the washroom.
Get on to come on.
Yeah, no, Josie, you do need to get onto
great
that.
Fun. She does need to get onto that. These needs to be playing out over the whole estate. I think.
Yeah. I hope you're listening, Josie. Okay, moving on to our next question from Jocelyn on Facebook. She asked, quite simply, will Dirtfish be at Snowdrift 2024? David Evans, can you answer that?
In some way, shape or form, yes, we are still. Obviously, we're very, very keen to run Dirtfish Live Centre again with ARA next year, and we're working on those plans right now. But I've got to say, it's one event that I've never been to, and I absolutely can't wait to get there. So it is the week, directly the week before Sweden. So I think there is a little bit of crossover. But yeah, those are our, that's the plan right now. So absolutely. And what was the name? Sorry. Of the question. Jocelyn.
I am available to co-drive for anybody. I will drive as well, of course, rather yep. accomplished. I won't go off, I promise, but I would co-drive for somebody there.
All I was going to say is, Jocelyn, please come and say hello. If you happen to be there, it'd be great to see you. And that's one of the best things about American rallying, is just the characters that you meet. They are just brilliant. We absolutely love every park expose, meeting new people, and yeah, having a fabulous time. And I just wanted to revert back to an earlier question that an answer came to me as well, that talking about an American world champion, why don't we get Brandon Semenuk in WRC2, because yes. he would love to compete in the world championship, and I'm sure he could be a world champion WRC2 at least. Sorry, moving on.
Brilliant, thank you, David. Guys, we've reached our last question.
Ooh,
and it's That's a nice
good
one.
Timing as well.
It is
exactly. Wow. Almost and it's planned. A nice one, and it comes from Ted Down Under on X. And I'll ask it to each of you. What is your favourite rally car and livery of all time?
So difficult. I love them all.
I'll pick on Colin first.
Yeah. No, listen, I have a special affinity with Subaru. The 2002 Subaru with the 555 livery. 2002, 2003, probably the last years we saw the 555 livery, but 2002... that's when I went to my very first rally and got involved in rallying. Met George Donaldson for the first time as well.
Whatever happened to him?
2000...
Whatever happened to him?
Whatever happened to him? I remember meeting him, and it was a meeting that David Richards couldn't chair. So it was all of our marketing team, and George Donaldson chaired it. And I just remember being impressed by this man's ability and knowledge to speak. And to make sense. And I thought, oh, he's a guy I would like to speak to a little bit more. Jeez, 20 years ago, 21 years ago.
And then you found out what an idiot I really am.
So that 2002 with Solberg and with Mäkinen and with Toshi Arai, you're a very, very special place in my heart.
George, what's yours?
It's a difficult one. I love all rally cars so much. The Vauxhall Chevette, the HSR. I love those. Penty, the first year of the Chevette, the best film ever made at the time it was released, the best rally film ever made at the time it was released, I think, without a doubt.
Probably, what was it called?
The Chevette?
No, the film.
It was Penty, the first year of the Chevette.
Oh, really? I've never seen that, John.
Yeah, it's a Barry
That's Hinchcliffe. That's a creative name.
Here I am, gullible as ever. Look at that, listeners. What can I
no,
say?
No, genuinely, I didn't...
Oh, you've never seen it?
I have never seen it. And where were you, George, then, earlier this year, when Colin and I were tearing around Lancashire following Steve Rimmer and Ian Grindrod gorgeous show at HSR?
I just want to say I wasn't invited. And that, I mean, I was actually just hankering after
it. It's a standing invite. You know
it is. Take it as read. I'll
where
get
we
to the
go,
next
you
one.
Go.
I was so the Chevette HSR has a massive place in my heart. Who doesn't love a Mark II Escort? And I've had the joy of driving quite a powerful one on three or four rallies with a friend of mine, sadly just passed last year, Jim Noble. But if I had to put an absolute favourite, the first professional co-drive of my life was with Bjorn Waldegard in a Group B Celica in the Ivory Coast, round 120-kilometre section of the rally. The night before the rally, we needed to run in a load of diffs that had failed, and Bjorn did that. Fred Gallagher went to bed. He needed somebody in the car with him, and I jumped in, and we did about three laps of 120 kilometres and changed the diff each time. And we started about 10 o'clock at night and finished about 1:30 in the morning the night before the rally. So that was my introduction to top driving. And Fred was there after the first lap, and then he went off to bed, but he let me do that first lap, and he said, what did you think? And I said, I thought that was great. He expected me to be gobsmacked and amazed, and I just thought it was perfect. I wasn't scared by the speed. I thought it was right. It was everything I expected it to be. Most people are like Colin, absolutely quivering wreck and amazed, whereas I just saw I saw everything practically happening as I thought it should. I was absolutely amazed and gobsmacked, of course, but it was all within my scope of understanding and realisation. So that Group B Celica for me, it was a, they called it the Whistling Pig, but what a car, what a top speed in it, 145 miles an hour in Africa trim. Nobody had a car that quick. It was amazing. So, yeah.
Brilliant.
Vauxhall
Thank
Chevette,
you, George.
Group B Celica, ST185 Celica, amazing. Yeah, just love them all.
David, James, your favourite? Yours, James. Let's do yours first.
Well, I'm going to pick, and it's a car that's got a bit of a special significance for me. I always really liked the Polo WRC. I know that's a modern suggestion, and we like being a bit more historical. But that for me is the car that
which livery?
Well, the later livery, I think the 15 and 16 livery with the Red Bull on the front end. But that's the car for me that re-enlivened my passion for the World Championship, because it got a little bit stale for a few years with just Ford and Citroën, and especially with Ford pulling out at the end of 2012, and then a big manufacturer like VW coming back, a cool little car and a nice livery. That was really something that just brought me back to being a mega fan of the WRC. So I'll pick that one because it's the first one that comes into my mind.
For me, it has to be the Lancia Delta S4. I always wanted to say the Metro 6R4, the computer vision car, and I spent much of my youth in double maths or whatever drawing the and colouring in the computer vision car in the back pages of my maths book, and somewhere there is some amazing pictures that I've drawn of that car. But ultimately, once the S4 came along, the Martini livery, I just totally fell in love with it. And I remember in 86 RAC, standing with my father somewhere in Wales. And I remember I was small, wellies. I'd got wellies on with two pairs of rugby socks or something and just couldn't feel my toes and was beginning to think, what on earth are we doing here? We'd probably slept in the car or something. And then Marco Allen, or could well have been, it would have been 85, of course, sorry. It could have been Henry Toivonen came past, and just, it blew my mind. And I remember you couldn't actually see the car, or I couldn't, because I was obviously a bit shorter, but I could just see through people and through the trees and seeing this blue, red, white, and blue flash go past. And then as it braked for the corner, you know, the huge shoot of flames out the flames shooting out the back. It was incredible. And the noise, you know, I'll never forget the noise. Loved it ever since. And it left an indelible mark on me. Not literally, of course. Sorry.
I should hope not. Well, we're sport for choice, really, aren't we, guys? There's so many to choose from. But great question from Ted down under there. And that's it. We're at the end of our question list. Guys, you can relax.
Wow.
No more nasty ones. Thank you to everyone who sent in questions. It's been great fun to go through them. And let us know. Tell us in the comments on socials. If you want to see more of this type of thing, if you enjoyed it, please do let us know. Guys, I think there's nothing more to say. We'll say thank you to everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time on Spin the Rally Pod.
And actually, see you next year, because this could be...
This is it.
Yeah, this is the end of the year. We've got a nice CER pod going out on Boxing Day. But yeah, James, I have to say, James, great job with hosting.
Yeah.
And
it was a brilliant finish there, James. You wrapped up beautifully until David and George decided to trample all over it.
We can cut this out, Colin. It's fine.
Oops. Well, that's been the story of the year, hasn't it? You know, everything going really well and then me just jumping in and ruining it. So why not continue it right until the end? So apologies, James. I'm very sorry.
No worries. I'll say it again if you missed it. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and see you next time. And happy Christmas, happy New Year, whenever you're listening to this. See you soon on Spin the Rally Pod.